The appearance of acting OMB Director Jeff Zients before the House Armed Services Committee came one day after the administration sent initial guidance to agencies to begin planning for automatic reductions of more than $100 billion in defense and non-defense budgets for fiscal year 2013. He told the committee the executive branch will be ready to implement the cuts on January 2nd if Congress can't work out an alternative, and that unfortunately, OMB has experience in planning for doomsday budget scenarios.
Government shutdown, possible debt ceiling. We know how to do this. We will be ready. We'll be ready at DOD. We'll be ready across the government if, unfortunately, Congress doesn't do its job. There are 5 months between today and January 2nd. That is plenty of time for Congress to pass balanced deficit reduction. And at the same time, it's more than enough time for us to be ready for the unfortunate possibility of January 2nd coming to be, and we have to implement the sequester. We will be ready. But really, that's not where the energy should be spent. The energy should be spent on passing balanced deficit reduction to avoid what everybody agrees is bad policy.
Zients insisted, though, that the administration can't tell lawmakers exactly where the cuts will fall until lawmakers pass appropriations for 2013. Without that, they won't know exactly where to subtract the spending from. The planning effort that began this week has agencies combing through each of their programs, projects, and activities to determine which ones are exempted from sequestration by other parts of federal law. Those that aren't will face cuts in the neighborhood of 10% next fiscal year. While he couldn't name individual programs, he did give lawmakers a flavor of what they could expect in their districts. On the domestic spending side,
more than 16,000 teachers and aides would lose their jobs. Close to 700,000 young children and mothers would lose nutrition assistance. 100,000 kids would lose their places in Head Start. The FAA would face significant cuts in operations. Food safety and workplace safety inspections would be cut back. The number of FBI agents, Border Patrol agents, and transportation safety staff would decline. And the NIH would have to halt or curtail vital scientific research, such as research into cancer and childhood diseases.
On the defense side, the Budget Control Act, the law that created sequestration, leaves DOD with very little flexibility about where to make its $55 billion share of cuts next year, according to Dr. Ashton Carter, the Deputy Secretary of Defense.
While I can describe many of sequestration's impacts on DOD, it's not possible to devise a plan to implement it that somehow eliminates these consequences or even mitigates them substantially. The intent of sequester was to use the threat of mutually agreeable cuts to both defense and non-defense programs implemented inflexibly and mindlessly to force Congress to enact a compromise deficit reduction plan. It was never designed to be implemented.
Each of DOD's 2,500 programs would take a proportional share of those spending reductions. Carter says that would seriously disrupt defense activities and make the programs that already has in place much less efficient.
Some managers would be forced to buy fewer articles, fewer weapons. Reductions in buy sizes will cause unit costs of weapons to rise, which will in turn result in further cuts in buy sizes. In cases where we cannot feasibly reduce the quantity of items bought, we would have to delay projects, which is also economically inefficient. Many military construction projects could be rendered unexecutable by sequestration. We would be forced to delay fixing schools, defer construction of new medical facilities, delay environmental cleanup, and so forth.
There are some important exceptions to the across-the-board cuts, though. For example, the law gives the president the authority to exempt military pay accounts from the cuts, an option he decided to exercise this week. The trade-off, though, is that the rest of DOD's accounts will have to absorb extra cuts to make up for that exemption. And while the cuts apply to the Overseas Contingency Operations Budget, which pays for the war in Afghanistan, Carter says DOD would be able to protect warfighting operations. That's because many of the maintenance and operations accounts are shared between DOD's base budget and the contingency budget. But again, there's a trade-off. He says extra cuts in the base budget would have a negative impact on the readiness of military units who are about to deploy, especially in the Army and Marine Corps.
We would seek to minimize effects on readiness of units deploying in the near term, but we could probably not do so fully. As a result, some later deploying units, including some deploying to Afghanistan, could receive less training again, especially in the Army and the Marine Corps. Under certain circumstances, reduced training could also impact the readiness of other units to respond to new contingencies, should they occur. Next, sequestration would force DOD, and for that matter other government agencies, to reduce funding for civilian personnel. We would probably have to release temporary employees and impose at least a partial hiring freeze. We might also have to impose unpaid furloughs on our civilian personnel. You can imagine the effect on the output, not to mention the morale, of these defense employees who conduct so many of the department's essential support functions, from repairing weapons to conducting needed oversight and audits.
Personnel services like commissaries and even health care for retirees and military families would also suffer, Carter says. And despite reports that DOD's program managers have already begun slowing down their contracting as a preemptive move to prepare for sequestration, Carter says that's not showing up in the regularly updated acquisition data he sees, though he acknowledges he has heard anecdotal reports that it's happening. Zeint says the direction OMB's giving to the entire federal workforce is to treat their spending activity as though it's business as usual.
Agencies are instructed, as I said, to continue their normal business operation, which means to continue to spend at the appropriate level, obviously not to in any way violate the Anti-Efficiency Act, at the same time not to slow down spending.
Carter says that admonition is important. He says if it's not followed, DOD, other agencies, and the companies they contract with will end up suffering from sequestration, even if Congress ultimately prevents it.
For example, we do not want to unnecessarily alarm employees by announcing adverse personnel actions or by suggesting that such actions are likely. For efficiency reasons, we do not want to hold back on the obligation of funds, either for weapons projects or operating programs, that would have been obligated in the absence of a possible sequestration. Nor do we want to cut back on training, which would harm military readiness in a period when we face a complex array of national security challenges.
At least half of the hearing was occupied by strands of questions, answers, and speeches that were highly partisan, unusually so for an Armed Services Committee meeting, with Democrats and Republicans arguing over whose bright idea sequestration was in the first place and who's responsible for the fact that Congress hasn't undone it yet. And while there are technically 5 months for them to reach an agreement, translating that period into the congressional schedule during an election season leaves precious little time to reach a deal. Armed Services Committee Chairman Buck McKeon is worried.
We have two legislative weeks left before we leave for the election to go home and tell people what a great job we're doing. And then we come back after the election, and you know what the environment here will be like. People that have lost their elections, that are given a desk down in the basement, said don't miss any votes, to try to solve something that is very, very important that we haven't been able to solve for a year and a half. I'm frustrated with that, and I think that it's very important that we do that. In the meantime, though, they do have a responsibility to let the people know what they can expect. We have a responsibility to fix this. I'm just not very optimistic at how we're going to go about that.
In Washington, Jared Serbu, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.